You're listening to the Ref Recap Podcast on 960theref.com. Here are your hosts, Sam Franco and Ryan Goldstein.
All right, welcome into another exciting edition of the Ref Recap Podcast right here on 960theref.com. Sam Franco and Ryan Goldstein along with you. Thank you so much for joining us, and we've got plenty to get to today. Two big topics on today's program. And the first is obviously March Madness and the Final Four. And we will also talk some UGA spring football and some position battles and things to be concerned or things to be excited about on the offensive side of the ball. So plenty to get to, as I said, on today's podcast. But starting off, South Carolina is in the Final Four, and that is going to create a lot of pressure on a bunch of different coaches around the college basketball landscape, not just in the SEC, but really everywhere, because you look at a team like South Carolina, who has never been to a Final Four, never even won a tournament game before this season, and now they're in the Final Four, and you've got to give Frank Martin a lot of credit for what he's been able to do. You've got to appreciate that. And a guy that may have been a little under fire, certainly a guy that is very fiery and will get into it with his players, but he's toned it down, and that's a very good thing for them because it's gotten them to this point, and certainly is very exciting for college basketball to see a team kind of come out of nowhere like that. So certainly exciting for South Carolina. But, Ryan, I tell you what, it definitely puts pressure on coaches and definitely is something that we didn't see coming.
Man, if South Carolina can get to a Final Four, there's no reason Georgia can't in this current landscape.
Absolutely, and I think that Georgia's not going to be the only school that thinks like that. I think that a lot of schools are going to be thinking like that, and not really even just in the SEC, but, I mean, around the country. You look at a team like South Carolina that had never won an NCAA tournament game, and now they've won a bunch getting to the Final Four.
Right. No, look, I mean, it was improbable for it to happen, but it shows that there's clearly a foundation there and a recipe for success. And again, they have the best player in the SEC, Darius Thornwell, who's been a beast in this tournament. And it just also goes to show you, if you have the right makeup and you get hot at the right time, you know, you can do some pretty impressive things. And I think that's a lot of what these teams are in the tournament. I mean, that's the difference with the NCAA tournament and why some people love it and while some people also hate it. I love it because it might not be the best team that always wins a national championship, but it's a team that gets hot at the right time. And to me, there's something exciting about that.
Absolutely, there certainly is. So we'll jump now to actually talking about South Carolina's matchup, and they will be taking on Gonzaga out in Phoenix, and they are going to be the early game, 6:09 p.m. coming up on Saturday evening. And I'll say this, Gonzaga has had a remarkable season getting to their first Final Four. So we got a matchup of two teams in the first Final Four for each school. Granted, Gonzaga's been more successful, obviously, in basketball than South Carolina has. But I look at this matchup, and I really see either team coming out of it. I think the big difference in this game, or the difference maker, could be Sendarius Thornwell, who is having himself one heck of a tournament. And he's one of the best players in the country, but for him and his team to have rallied to get here is still very remarkable.
Yeah, I think South Carolina, the run they've had, like you said, it's been remarkable. I think this is where it ends, though. I think Gonzaga, look, they rank number one in defensive efficiency, and that's according to the Ken Pom ratings, who's one of the guys who follows this, you know, has these analytics, and I think it's pretty on top of it. Their big guys are really good. They have a young freshman in Collins, and then this guy, obviously, Karnowski, the one with the beard, who has kind of been a fascination among college basketball, who a year ago couldn't even get out of bed, and now is competing in a Final Four. I think Look, they have three players that played, you know, at big Division I basketball programs. One was at Missouri, one was at Washington, and one was at Cal, and they all transferred to Gonzaga. So it's not as if the players on this team are guys who weren't recruited very highly and all of a sudden kind of end up at Gonzaga, and it's a feel-good story. I mean, these are kids who can play basketball. They play good defense. They have some big guys. I think this is where South Carolina's run ends on Saturday.
Yeah, it really feels like that, although we've said that a couple different times, and I think
that's true.
I think beating Duke in Greenville, I think it was the perfect storm for them. You know, Greenville ended up being a pretty good crowd for them to get that win over Duke. So I would agree. I think that Gonzaga is a little bit more ready to win this type of game, and South Carolina is going to be maybe a little bit distracted, although both schools will be because this is their first Final Four, but it just seems like Gonzaga and Mark Few are a little more maybe prepared for this just because you're going to have a lot of people on that South Carolina campus going around and patting all these guys on the back, and maybe that turns into a little bit of a distraction going into this weekend. But if Thornwell can play the game that he's played throughout this tournament, they have a very good shot to win this game. And I'm going to call for them to win it. Just because they seem to really have that mojo going, that just something good going for them. And, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and call it. I'm going to say that South Carolina beats Gonzaga and advances into the final, where there are two teams on the other side that have had interesting runs into the championship game, or the Final Four rather, as well, where you have North Carolina, who kind of struggled there against Arkansas, but you know, outside of that, they've had a really good run in their portion of the tournament as well. You know, they beat a very good Butler team pretty soundly, and then, you know, when they got to playing against Kentucky, that was one of the best games we've seen in this tournament in quite some time, you know, outside of maybe the final, especially last year's final when Villanova broke North Carolina's hearts. But for Malik Monk to have buried that three, and then North Carolina to come down and get Luke May to hit that little jump shot to give them the win, that was really just an up-and-down, fast-paced game. And maybe having a emotional game like that before the Final Four helps them out in this case. But if you look at Oregon, what they did was truly remarkable. After Kansas had thumped Purdue to get to the Elite Eight, Oregon goes out and just crushes Kansas in the Elite Eight to get to their first Final Four since 1939.
Yeah, the thing with that Oregon game, Oregon-Kansas, I mean, look, Oregon played phenomenal, and I thought at the end, you know, and we've talked about this a couple of times, some of this late game clock management to me in college basketball has kind of become horrendous. I mean, I thought Oregon did a poor job late, but fortunately for them, Kansas couldn't hit a shot. But they played so well in the first half, and they would hit shots late in the shot clock, and the second half to kind of bail them out. But this is a fun team to watch. And look, this is also a team that lost one of its top players in Chris Boucher in the Pac-12 tournament. So it's not even as if their team is at full strength. And then you mentioned that North Carolina-Kentucky game was one for the ages. Luke May, number 32. And I guess Leitner is also number 32. So Kentucky has had two shots by number 32s hit against them in Elite Eight games that have been pretty horrendous, you know, in their viewpoint. A great game all around. And this North Carolina team is back in the Final Four for a second year in a row, looking to redeem themselves from last year when they lost to Villanova, obviously on that last second shot by Chris Jenkins. And that's the interesting thing, is you have three teams that are making Final Four appearances either for the first time or the first time since 1939 in Oregon, when it was the first ever Final Four. And that tournament only included eight teams total. So, I mean, North Carolina is obviously the blue blood program here, but a team that's experienced, has been here before, and is really just trying to redeem themselves from last year. So it'll be interesting to see how you have that kind of experience versus an Oregon team who's gotten hot at the right time, also playing without one of their top players, but has the Pac-12 player of the year in Dylan Brooks, and how they can match up this Saturday.
Yeah, and you look at Oregon, and it's really Brooks and Dorsey. Those are the two guys that are the danger men, and they both have had great runs in this tournament. And it really just goes to show you that despite the Pac-12 being a down conference and not necessarily getting the respect that they probably feel like they deserve, they had some, you know, two teams in the Elite Eight, and they played extremely well to get to this point.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And look, and that was the other thing with the SEC. It was a down conference. I still feel like it was a down conference. I mean, look, they showed that. They got three teams in the Elite Eight, and it was impressive. And obviously the one we mentioned earlier, South Carolina, is a team that nobody expected to be there. But it just goes to show you, once March comes around, if you have the, you know, the right pieces in place, you get hot, you can do a good job. I mean, the ACC was the conference that was lauded as the best. They only ended up having one team, I think, make the Sweet 16, and that was North Carolina. So you just really never know year to year, or, you know, tournament to tournament, what can happen. But I'm excited about this Final Four. I'm always a proponent of seeing new teams and different faces in these big events. So I'm excited that you have three teams that really haven't been there. And then obviously North Carolina, we mentioned, was there last year. But look, I mean, the national championship could pit, you know, I mean, South Carolina, you could have South Carolina versus North Carolina in a basketball national championship. I don't think anybody would have ever thought that.
No, but that's what I'm going to call for, actually, because looking at that North Carolina-Oregon game, I just think North Carolina is going to have too much for Oregon there. I mentioned, Oregon's really got two danger men. North Carolina can hit you from so many different angles. I mean, you got Jackson, Barry, Meeks. I mean, they just are a loaded, loaded squad. And then you've got May hitting shots to send you to the Final Four. So I think North Carolina ultimately wins out here. And for me, that sets up a North Carolina-South Carolina matchup. And I've said this all along in this tournament. I think North Carolina's best is better than anyone else's, and they have certainly played that way to get to this point, and I don't see it stopping. So I'm going to go ahead and just – I think North Carolina's going to cut down the nets once again.
Okay, I like that pick, and I'm with you. And I agree with the sentiment of North Carolina's best is better than anybody else's. So I think they also win the tournament. I'm going to go with Gonzaga facing off against North Carolina in a close national championship. But North Carolina this year finds a way to win it.
All right, so that's our little rundown of March Madness. One more basketball or college basketball thing to get to here, and it does involve the Final Four. I was talking about this with some friends the other day, and looking at this Final Four, the TV networks probably aren't super stoked about it just because you do have a blue blood in North Carolina, but you don't really have any traditional markets outside of that. I mean, Gonzaga is a good story, and that's a good fan base, but it's a small one. Then you have South Carolina and Oregon, and it kind of got me to thinking, like, what the best for TV Final Four would be, and I was speaking with some friends about it, and we came up with this, and I want to get your thoughts on it. TV would love a Final Four that is Syracuse, North Carolina, Kentucky, and UCLA, because you're hitting major TV markets in LA and New York. You're hitting some blue blood programs in UNC and Kentucky, and all of those programs are really great historically in terms of being basketball powers. So I think you would get great basketball there, and you would get a lot of eyeballs on it, just because right now when you're looking at this tournament, you love Cinderella's in the early rounds, but you want the chalk to win out and have these really marquee matchups set up in the end. So again, a Syracuse, North Carolina, Kentucky, UCLA Final Four seems like it would be the perfect storm for the TV viewing.
Yeah, I like all those picks. The only thing I thought right off the bat, maybe differently, and to just substitute another northern market team would be Villanova. They're not obviously in New York, but you get that Northeast. I mean, they're Philly, so you'd get that section of the country rooting for them, and obviously the success they've had as of late. But yeah, I mean, I think Syracuse, obviously, and then the only other program I'm thinking you could substitute, because it's not like Lexington is a TV market, so if you were going to substitute another program, you could get Kansas.
Yeah, and no, I think that'd be fine. It's just,
but look, those are all markets where it would be a made-for-TV Final Four.
Absolutely, and I think that, you know, you look at a Villanova, I think UConn was another school that I had mentioned as well. Just TV just wants to have the big-time teams that are going to draw in maybe your more casual fan, and that's what you look at with those big TV markets. And B, you know, you want those storylines, and I know that there are some good stories coming in here, especially when you have a thing like South Carolina and Gonzaga both making their first Final Fours, and Oregon hadn't been there in a while. So you have those storylines, but those aren't basketball tradition-rich schools. So it's kind of a both sides of the coin thing. It's like, on one hand, it's new, and I think a lot of people like that. But on the other hand, it's just not basketball sexy, so to speak. So I don't think that CBS, you know, TBS, the networks that have been covering this tournament are super pumped about the teams other than North Carolina that made it here. But for the viewing audience and those that are pumped about basketball and those that like watching this kind of thing, I mean, it's great.
Yeah, look, yeah, I'm with you. And I think for the casual fan, like you mentioned, it's harder because it doesn't have the brand name that maybe other tournaments have had in years past. But I think if you're a basketball fan and you know what these teams are about, there's some pretty cool storylines in South Carolina and Gonzaga making their first ever appearances. Then you have an Oregon team. And it's just, it's always interesting when you have teams from out west, because you feel like there's just such a East Coast, maybe not even bias is the right word, but everybody, the majority of people you feel like are watching, you know, in the big markets are East Coast driven. So when you have two teams from the West Coast, which I don't think has happened in years, in Oregon and Gonzaga, it definitely shifts it a little bit.
Yeah, no doubt about that. So we'll look forward to watching the tournament, and we'll give, I guess, reactions on next week's edition of the podcast. And it just goes to another thing that I really hate is the fact that the championship game is on Monday night, and college basketball and football both have really locked that down as the night they want to have it. And it goes into a whole nother debate we can save for another day, and we might just do that on the next edition of the podcast, but why on earth do they have these games on Monday nights and so late, you know, when people have to work and things like that? But the basketball isn't too bad because it's not as long. Football's a little worse, but we will save that for another day and move on now to Georgia football and spring practice, which is well underway. We've got G-Day coming up on April 22nd, and a couple of big storylines out of spring practice right now. Obviously, you have the quarterback competition, which I'm going to be honest, I don't necessarily know if it really is that big of a competition. Granted, I think if Jake Fromm is the better guy, Kirby Smart is not going to be scared to play him. But I do think there's a lot working against him, mainly the lack of familiarity with the system and the disadvantage he has with Jacob Eason already having a year in this. So I think that Jacob Eason is going to be the starter. I would be shocked if he's not. And I just don't see Jake Fromm coming in, and I could be totally wrong, but I just don't – it just doesn't feel like he's going to come in and take the job.
I think it would be a bigger indictment on Jacob Eason, where he is, if he can't maintain the starting job, than it would be impressive if Fromm gets it type of thing. And that's why I don't believe that Jake Fromm will get it, because as talented as Jake Fromm could be, you would like to think that the year of experience in the SEC under his belt and Jacob Eason – would be enough to just get him over the edge to at least start the opener and the few games after that. You know, if the season gets derailed and you're in October and things start to change, maybe you look to the future more and you say, is Jake Fromm the guy? Then something that could happen, but I'm with you. I think it'd be shocking if Jake Fromm started the opener. And I think it would really say to, I guess, the level of progression or lack thereof that Jacob Eason has exhibited over the last year.
Yeah, so that's something to look out for. It might be a little bit more of a media storyline than one that's actually a storyline in camp, but some that are actually things to pay attention to that are probably more pressing are the situation at offensive line and what Kirby Smart has really called kind of a revolving door here in spring practice, trying to figure out some of these spots on the line, as well as the depth at receiver, and with Riley Ridley facing discipline, we don't necessarily know what that's going to be, although historically it's been a one-game suspension for a, you know, drug-related offense like this or a marijuana-related offense. So those are some of the things to look at. I'll start there with the receiver position and really finding guys to fill some holes. And the big one is Isaiah McKenzie, because he was so important for Georgia's offense and what they did at times last season and even previous seasons. And again, he was a player that there was a lot of good, but there was also some bad mixed in there. It was a feast or famine type thing. He may have a mistake where he turns the ball over or didn't necessarily field a punt correctly, but there were games where you have no shot of winning it without him scoring and providing big spark plays. So who's that going to be for Georgia going forward this season?
Yeah, well, it seems a name that keeps getting mentioned is Mecole Hardman. And a lot of people, obviously, and Kirby has said this, that his primary focus will be at cornerback. And it seems like he's, you know, taking reps with the second team. But it also seems that he's so talented that maybe he gets some looks at that spot where Isaiah McKenzie was, because he's a playmaker. And look, you know, this is kind of where coaching, I think, you almost have to look at it as simplistically as possible and say, where can this guy make plays? And let's put him there. You can't get too caught up in the fact that, oh, maybe this is where we want him to be at cornerback and it's not working, so we're going to be stubborn and try to keep him there. And look, he could turn out to be the best cornerback in Georgia football history. I'm not saying he can't, but if you feel like he can make plays, he needs to be on the field somewhere, and it seems like that could be an area for him to make plays. And it doesn't have to be, look, he could be there 10 plays a game and make a couple big plays and still play corner and play on special teams. I mean, it looks like he could be, if he reaches the full potential that so many of us think he can be, a Champ Bailey-type player at Georgia.
Absolutely, and, you know, anytime you ring a name like that out there, obviously it's going to bring a lot of excitement, but it's also going to bring a lot of hype, and we'll just wait and see on a guy like Hardman. But, yeah, I think that you need to put playmakers in positions to make plays, and if he can do that better as a, you know, kind of offensive utility guy, as opposed to being a backup corner, then absolutely, you put him in there, and you could also find some other packages and things like that for him. So I think that that's definitely something to look at, and at the receiving core, Riley Ridley missing that first game, you know, who's going to step up? And I think Stanley's a guy to look out for. I obviously think that the receiver has been a position for Georgia that really has been, you know, kind of iffy over the last few seasons. So if the Dogs can get some good minutes out of, or rather good series, good plays, and good production out of some of these guys, then I think that will obviously help Jacob Eason, because he's – or Jake Fromm. I don't want to necessarily throw that away yet. But the big thing for Georgia, I think, on offense, outside of, you know, the receiving core – and we'll get to the offensive line in a minute, but I just feel like they've got to get the tight ends involved more. I mean, you've got great tight ends in Isaac Nauta, Jeb Blazevich, Jackson Harris. I mean, there are guys that definitely can have positive impacts on games, and if you can kind of own the middle of the field with those tight ends, that's just going to make it easier for the receivers.
Without a doubt. And that was an area of strength you felt like coming into last season, even with Nauta as a freshman, and it didn't feel like the tight end was a position that was utilized nearly as much. And look, between our tight ends and our running backs, you feel like they're matchup nightmares all around. I mean, look, you line up Isaac Nauta in the slot, can a linebacker cover him? I don't think so. Or look, you put Sonny Michel in the slot, can a linebacker cover him? I don't think so, because he's so fast. So, I mean, you feel that even with a receiving core that might not be as strong as in years past, between the running backs and the tight ends, putting them in different positions and allowing them to make plays, you feel like you have a solid offense. It just might not be the most prototypical offense that we've seen in years past at Georgia.
Right, so involve the tight ends more, find out who's going to be your playmakers in the receiving game. You obviously have depth at running back, so that's not really an issue that needs to be touched on. And last but not least, it's that offensive line where you're going to have some very young players playing on it. I don't think there's any question about it. I think, you know, Isaiah Wilson comes in as a five-star recruit. You've also got a Natori Johnson that may end up, you know, playing on the offensive line very early on in his career, so it could be a better offensive line than last season, but it's going to be a younger one.
Right. And you mentioned the kind of the new additions. I think DeMarcus Hayes is also someone to watch out for, the junior college addition. Yeah, I mean, you feel like the offensive line is probably a year away from really being solid to the point where you feel like, okay, this is no longer a weakness at Georgia. And I think it's probably this year is shifting. You're in a transition where it's maybe won't be as much of a point of focus, but I think it's also something where it's not as solidified as you'd like it to be. And like you said, there'll be younger players like an Isaiah Wilson maybe come in here and get some reps. So it's a work in progress, and it's almost one of those things. You hope it's a work in progress to the point where you can continue to move and match pieces, but at the same time looking ahead to 2018 while being okay in 2017, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it totally does. So there's that, hey, let's go ahead and try to be as good as we can now, but also look forward to great things that could possibly be coming down the road. But at the same time, this is a season where a lot of media members and a lot of the hype for the SEC is looking at Georgia and saying, well, who else is going to win the SEC East?
Yeah, and there's really no reason Georgia can't win the SEC East by that argument, because if you look around, Tennessee you feel like is not nearly at the power or strength that they were last year with all the returning starters they had. They'll lose a lot of players. Florida, while making back-to-back appearances in Atlanta, it just doesn't seem like that program has lifted off to the point where Jim McElwain would like them to. A lot of the defensive players were, you know, from the Muschamp regime, and it seems like those players would now have gone to the NFL. So can McElwain have restocked what was there in Gainesville? And then you look around, it's like Vanderbilt, Missouri, Kentucky, they're not traditional powers. We're not too worried about them. Am I missing anybody? Vanderbilt, Kentucky, Tennessee. I mean, look, so you,
well,
you
South
think
Carolina,
about
but
South Carolina, that was the one. Okay. And that's a team and a program where I think Will Muschamp did a really good job in year one. They were better than people expected, but you still feel like South Carolina, Georgia has more talent and is recruited better to the point where, you know, if it was just looking at talent alone, Georgia would have the edge there.
Absolutely. So the SEC East definitely wide open for Georgia to swoop in and claim again. But we'll see if they're able to do it, because saying that they're a favorite is one thing, but them actually going out there and doing it is another. Next week, we'll get to some of the defensive stuff, because I feel like we focus primarily on offense. And look, a lot of people say this Georgia defense is going to be a very impressive unit. So we'll talk about that a little bit more next week. But any parting shots for you as we wrap up this edition of the Ref Recap Podcast?
Oh, man, basketball season's almost over. That's a bummer. College basketball's almost over. I think, if anything, though, what South Carolina has done will give Georgia fans hope for the future, whether it's with Coach Fox or whether it's, you know, with somebody else. I think Georgia has the ability to do what South Carolina has done, to do what Florida has done, to do what Kentucky, maybe not Kentucky, I'll say South Carolina and Florida have done. So I think be excited about what the future could be for Georgia basketball.
And I couldn't agree with you more. All right, that'll wrap things up for this edition of the Ref Recap Podcast right here on 960theref.com. Catch us every week, or most weeks, here on 960theref.com. We also post this on our Facebook and Twitter pages, facebook.com/960theref, Twitter at 960theref. Individually, I'm at Sam J. Franco. He's at TheRealRyGuy19. So plenty of different ways to get in touch with us and plenty of different ways to find the Ref Recap Podcast. Again, right here on 960theref.com. That'll do it for us this week. So be sure to check us out next time on the Ref Recap Podcast.